أما بعد فقد قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله إن الحسين مصباح الهدى والسفينة النجاة. صلوات على محمد وعلى محمد. We thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We're always grateful to Him. All praise is always due to Him for giving us this opportunity yet again to gather like this and to attempt to understand Imam Hussein's mission. Year in and year out, we put our efforts together to gather in the beginning of the Islamic year to somehow understand why the Imam did what he did. To understand those values, to understand, of course, the purpose behind his mission, and then, of course, to adopt those values and to keep this Karbala mission alive. There are those, of course, that were not with us last year. There are those who are still with us this year, alhamdulillah. And so we should not take this opportunity lightly. And as Akil Bhai mentioned, of course, we should attempt, of course, to take something away for these next 10 nights. On a personal note, I want to thank the Jama'at, the Executive Committee, Mawlana Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi, for the opportunity that I have in front of you. I, of course, am born and raised in this city, and I like to call this community one of my homes. I grew up partly at 7340 Bayview Avenue, and I attended that mosque quite a bit. And I look around this room in this crowd, I see individuals who were my old East End Madrasa teachers, individuals who I played basketball with, individuals who coached me in hockey back in the MMBHL days. Individuals I've traveled with, I've had all-night discussions with, I've gone to dinner with. So this community is home for me. And for me to be able to sit here on the nights of the first of Muharram possibly, and to address all of you on these azim nights is nothing but a humble experience for me. I owe this community a lot. And the reality is, very humbly, I see myself as a brother and a son of yours. There are people in this room, back in the day of East End Madrasa, we used to pray Salat in the cafeteria of the high school. And during Zohar Salat, age of 8, 9, maybe 10 years old, I would sit there lined up with my friends and family praying Zohar Salat, and there'd be grown men on each side of the Jamaat. And they would sacrifice their fadilat, their Salat, on Awwal Waqt, to ensure that my salat was accurate. So when I would stand, and if my feet weren't quite apart enough, they would come and they would place their foot in between my feet. There are men in this room right now, looking at me right now, that when I would go into a ruku at the age of 9, they would go and they would push my back a little bit lower to ensure I perfect my ruku. There are people in this room that when I go into sajda, can you imagine this grown man would go into sajda with me to check if all 7 parts of my body were on the ground properly. That I wasn't doing sujood like this, and he would flatten my palm to make sure my palm hits the ground. People who taught me alif bata, people taught me how to do wudu properly, would sit there in the bathroom and watch me to make sure I start up here and not down here. And so it's humbling for me to be here in front of a community that's given me so much. And as Aqil Bhai announced, I'm with you for the next 12 nights. And we do have a topic in mind, and that content I'll begin tomorrow, inshallah. What I usually do every year in Muharram on the first night of this Muharram is talk a little bit about the etiquette and the adab of the month of Muharram. The istiqbal of the month of Muharram, the welcoming of the month of Muharram. This month, these gatherings are not ordinary gatherings. And these, of course, are all reminders for all of you. But it's important that we kind of lay down the foundation tonight to build on in the future nights. Imam Radha alayhi salatu wa salam, Allahumma salli ala. He has a very powerful hadith when it comes to gatherings where the Ahlul Bayt are mentioned, such as these types of gatherings. And he says, "Man jalasa majlasan yuhya fihi amruna lam yamut qalbuhu." That for the one who sits in a gathering where he says our affairs, the Ahlul Bayt's commands, our fada'il, our masa'ib, our traditions, our sayings, our sunnat, are what yuhya from hay, are kept alive, are given life. The one who sits in a gathering where all these things are mentioned, like this gathering you are sitting in tonight right now, lam yamut qalbuhu, their heart never dies. Yoma tamutul qulub, on the day where their hearts will die out of fear of Allah, the ones who sit in these gatherings, their heart on the day of judgment will not have an ounce of fear. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. I say that because I want all of us to understand the greatness of this month. You know, we're a very strange nation sometimes. It's very ajib that we are individuals who anticipate our grief. We decorate our sadness. We celebrate, for lack of a better word, our grief. We look forward to the first night of the month of Muharram. We plan everything out for the next 12 nights. In fact, some actually begin the countdown for the next Muharram the day after Ashura. We have suitcases labeled Muharram clothes, and after Mubahila, we take that suitcase out and we look through it and what fits, what doesn't fit. We iron it, we wash it, we get everything ready. We get our children ready, we have a schedule down packed, they get back from school, they nap for an hour, they have a little bit of a snack, and then they come somehow, they bring him here at 8 o'clock at night, when sometimes that's the peak of their bedtime. And we of course tell them on the way what's happening and where we're going and what's going on. And there is this level of, again, for lack of a better word in English, excitement about the arrival of the month of Muharram. And anybody on the outside would watch many of your families and would think that these people are strange. They're doing all this preparation to enter a hall that's draped in black. The people are draped in black. The speaker is draped in black. In about half an hour to 40 minutes, the lights will be off and we'll retell the gory details of a martyrdom of young children. Talk about the thirst of a four-year-old. The piercing of an arrow for a six-month-old. And as the days get closer to that pinnacle of that shahadat of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn, which is a very difficult maqdal to recite and to listen to, the public actually grows in numbers. There are many of you who have annual majlis at your homes. There are actually people who for one day out of the year mark their calendar, print up flyers, inform the people 3 months before Muharram starts sometimes. And for that one day, they flip the house upside down. The sofa goes in the garage, the TV in the basement, you lay down the white chadars, you make sure everyone is well, you know, you have the best clothes for your children. Your child never recites in any majlis anywhere along the year, but that day, it's a ghadki majlis. So for weeks and weeks and weeks, your wife practices with your child. And for the first time, he stands up there shaking with that paper, reciting, why? Because this majlis is inside my house. And you invite 100 people, even though your house only fits 50. And you spend X amount of dollars, either a full-fledged meal I've seen, or tabarruk. All for what? All for you? Maybe all for a moment that maybe Sayyidah Fatima might enter my house for that one majlis. It's very ajib. There are some of you who would not have one, you have 10 majlises every single day inside your homes. There are many of you who work 40 hours a week, get up in the morning, hit that Toronto traffic, get to work on time, spend 8 hours somehow on the 8th of Muharram going through work business. Meanwhile, your mind is in the evening majlis. You come home dead tired, exhausted, and the routine in the evening starts. Get your clothes ironed, you freshen up, you grab a quick tea, you pack the kids up, you pack your backpack full of snacks, and you're on your way to the majlis. You get home by 11, you're in bed by 12, you're back up the next morning. All for what? All for grief. All for sadness. And we come here and we listen to heart-wrenching tragedies, night after night after night, of a different personality. And the Messiah that we've heard since we're this big, that we have all memorized, we even know what day which Messiah will be read. And if I read the wrong Messiah on the wrong day, it's Akil by his head. Then why didn't you tell him that today is Abul Fazl Abbas's day? And when you hear the Messiah, you cry like you've heard it just yesterday, like you were mawjood on the plains of Karbala, like with your eyes you saw it yourself. And you've been hearing it for years. Because after a while, even tears for our loved ones dry up. We lose a father unexpectedly. And maybe after 15, 20 years, we can sit there and talk about my father. And talk about the fact that my father died like this. And his funeral was like this. For the first time, I might be able to see a picture of him, a video of him. Why? Because time has passed. Time heals, the heart has accepted a new normal, you move on. But this is a different grief. This is a different gham. It comes, it refreshes itself every single year, year in and year out. And we come rushing through that door for one moment where maybe we might shed one tear for Imam Hussein. And the hadith says that even if you can't cry, make a face like the one who cries. All of that happens inside the heart. The hadith he read was beautiful. It's a harara inside the heart of the mu'min. It's a movement, it's a mission, it's a fire that will never extinguish. Don't take this for granted. In about 40 days, some of you will travel to Karbala and be part of a group of 25, 27, 28 million people who will fly or swim or crawl or walk or run and take their newborn baby with the hopes that maybe I might get close enough to see the dhari, forget touch it, but just enough to say assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah and turn back and take my family back through this very difficult journey. I've seen images and so have you. Individuals who don't have legs and they push themselves from Najaf to Karbala 80 kilometers in length. All for what? A simple salam. We have no hopes of going to the dhari and kissing it and holding it and rubbing our cheek. No. If we get to see the golden dome from a distance, alhamdulillah, that's all I want. You travel across the ocean in a war-torn country with all these possibilities of something happening, doesn't matter. So these are not normal nights. And because they're not normal nights, we cannot enter this month on a normal state of mind. There has to be adab and etiquette involved. If we believe that there are angels present, and we do. If we believe that the jinn come to Imam Hussein, and we do. If we believe that Sayyidah Fatima comes to every majlis, and we do believe that. Then how we enter the majlis from our home, how we leave the home for this majlis has to be a little bit different. These are small things, I tell you, but things that are lost in this generation. My father, marhum, that many of you knew. I tell you, when it came to Imam Hussein's majlis, he was a strict man. He would check the bottom of my socks to make sure there was no holes in the socks. He'd have a no jean policy when it comes to the majlis of Imam Hussein. No t-shirts, nothing in your mouth. How dare you suck or chew on anything in your mouth during the majlis. Those were his rules, not the sharia, don't worry. He'd make sure whatever, if I had a button shirt, it was tucked in, my hair was combed, my face was washed. He'd make sure I sat beside him, I wouldn't move. And back then, they had what? Urdu majlises. No English speakers, no, very hard Urdu. Sit there and somehow get 1%, 2%, but don't move. If my knees were tired and I began to a little bit just kind of, you know, spread out my legs, he would stare at my legs. So those legs better go back to where they used to be. Why? Because this is not a normal gathering. And I asked my parents in the audience who bring their children, no doubt, 8 years old, 9 year old, 5 year old, 6 year old, they may not know what's going on, but they'll know that something is different with Baba and Mama when it comes to this majlis. This is not your normal Shabbat Jummah. These are not the Jashans of Rajab and Sha'aban. This is not Fatimiya. They have their own due respect. This is the first nights of the month of Muharram. And eventually they're going to ask that, Baba, why? Why can't I wear this? Why can't I do this? Every other time you're okay with this, but not now. And that's when you explain who Hussein ibn Ali is. And he'll get it. He'll get it. These kids may not know the story, may not even understand a word I say, but somehow if you tell them that tomorrow you can't come to the majlis, there'll be a war inside your home. They're tired, they're sleeping, one eye is open, but I'm not tired, Baba. Let's go to the majlis. Is this not a harara? Is this not something inside your heart? And I say this with the utmost response, knowing full of live feed and this streaming and that channel. Imam Hussein's name is that name that pulls out people that even sometimes God himself doesn't pull out. Wrong or right, that's not my debate. But there is something to this mission, to this azah, to this grief, to this commemoration that we have to begin to accept. Now the question that I have for myself and for all of you is this, that yes, we have all the tools for the reform, the revolution, the elevation, everything is there to reform our hearts. No doubt about it. In 10 nights, you can have one spark that can reform your heart. That's all that's needed. The question that I want all of us to ask on this first night of the month of Muharram is, what does Imam Hussein want from me? The expectation from us is a little bit higher than anybody else. You know, in India and Pakistan, in India more or less, they have these massive julooses, these processions, first 10 days. So I've heard. And they tell me that, Maulana, you know, not only are the Shias out in huge numbers, Hindus come out in these julooses. So now I want you to imagine, it's a picture that I paint every single Muharram. I want you to imagine the Jaloos is starting now. There's a Shia walking in that Jaloos. There's a Hindu right beside him. The Shia is draped in black. The Hindu is draped in black. The Shia is barefoot. The Hindu is barefoot. The Shia's sleeves are rolled as a sign of grief. The Hindu's sleeves are rolled as a sign of grief. The Shia is crying, the Hindu is crying, the Shia is beating his chest, the Hindu is beating his chest. There might be some khak in the hair of the Shia, there's khak in the hair of the Hindu. They approach that alam, and that Shia stops and pays his respect, the Hindu stops and pays his respect. The Jaloos is over, the Hindu goes back to his home, the Shia goes back to his home. Bivahir, in the apparent, no difference. But does Imam Hussein expect a little bit more from the Shia than from the Hindu? Absolutely yes. The question is what? Now all of you have, do, you know, you do your respectful tribute to Imam Hussein. There are many of you, for the first 10 days of Muharram, don't wear certain colors. You don't turn the television on. No useless talk. Some don't eat meat, for example. Some don't even sleep on their bed. They sleep on the floor. They don't want any comfort or luxury for the first 10 days. And that's your tribute, and may Allah accept it. That's beautiful. But does Imam Hussein require a little bit more than that from us, who understand his position when it comes to the wilayat of Allah? He's not just an avenue to get our du'as answered by Allah. He's a man that we recognize to be our third imam. Maybe, just maybe on this first night of Muharram, someone like me can promise Imam Hussein that your sacrifice is azim, it's great. Maybe On top of the fact that I'll only wear dark colors, I won't eat any meat, I won't open the television, I won't sleep on my cushy mattress, I won't do this, I won't do that. On top of that, I'll promise you, Imam Hussein, that for 10 straight days, I won't miss one fajr, for example. For 10 straight days, maybe on my commute to work, in between my classes, on my way to the majlis, maybe I'll open my Quran app and 5 verses of the Quran with meaning in these first 10 days to begin the reform process. I want us to think about what we can present to Imam Hussein as a hadiyah, as a gift. He's given us so much. He's given us possibilities of Jannah, avenues of salvation. He's given us this idea that we're sitting there listening to words from the speaker that's breaking our heart and tears are flowing down our face. We're beating our heads, but somehow there's serenity inside of our hearts. In fact, if we didn't cry as much, we complain to ourselves. I didn't cry as much as I'd like to. There are people in this audience that lose a loved one, devastating deaths from a young son to a father to a spouse to a parent. And somehow they can't get themselves to cry. So what do? They put on the masaib of Imam Hussein. And they empty their heart out to Imam Hussein. We owe this man a lot. His mission, this aza, is the source of our identity, an avenue of our salvation. He's a ray of our hope. Where would we be as a Shia nation without this azadari? Why do you think the enemy is pouring millions of dollars to start fitna and corruption inside this very institution amongst the Shias? Why do you think the ziyarah for Imam Hussein has always been difficult from day number one? It's never been easy to go to Karbala and send your salams to Imam Hussein. Because they know that if they go, arifan bihaqqina, with the understanding who Imam Hussein truly is, they'll come back as a brand new person. Who not only will bring deen to the musalla in the masjid, but bring deen to his workplace and his school classroom as well. And that scares the enemy. And they've recognized Imam Hussein to be that avenue. Have you and I, as a question, have you and I recognized this place to be a place of revolution? We have 10 nights. And the reality is that on the 11th of Muharram, this hall will be half empty. That's just the reality of it. It's hard, it's very difficult to commit to 10 nights of this type of schedule. I have the utmost respect for all of you who work and you teach and you do 40 hours, we can still hear every single night. Exhausted, completely drained. But the idea of being home while there's a majlis somewhere in the city does not sit well with you. So ask yourself, what can I give Imam Hussein these next 10 nights? What can I present to his legacy? Because the reality is this. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Every year when we remember a certain individual who is part of some legacy, some revolution, some movement, when we spend the day remembering that individual's legacy increases. I'll give you an example. In the US, they have a Martin Luther King Day. A day to recognize, of course, the father of the civil movement in the 60s in the US. National holiday in the US. And on that very day, I believe sometimes it's in January, they have all over television documentaries about Dr. King, interviews from his family, interviewed clips from back in his days, a recap of what he was able to accomplish, bring it back to today, and all these things. And the more they speak about Dr. King, the more Dr. King's legacy and him himself increase, naturally. Because for that one day now, everyone now remembers Dr. King. So for Dr. King himself, it's a day of elevation. And that's usually the case for every other hero of any revolution out there, except for one. When we gather like this, when every corner of the Shia world gathers like this on the first night of Muharram, and we commit to remembering Imam Hussein day in and day out for at least 10 nights, that remembrance, that dhikr of Imam Hussein does not elevate his legacy with all due respect. His legacy is already up there. He has 4,000 angels right now. 4,000 angels, Hadith says, that are simply circulating his wari, sending their salams to him. That remembrance does not elevate the person who is remembered. It elevates the people who are remembering that legacy. So these 10 nights are absolutely about us. And a golden opportunity has been presented in front of us. So make it a point inside your homes. And it begins from the home to prepare your families for the journey towards Imam Hussein's majlis. Ensure that they enter this majlis in the utmost etiquette, in the utmost adab, in the utmost respect. If that means that you check them over once in a while, then that's okay. If that means you straighten out their legs, it's okay. If that means you sit them up, if they're half lying down, that's okay. If that means you get them off the phone, then that's okay. But let them know that this is not an ordinary event. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. There's two points I want to make and then masayib, inshallah. We'll keep it short tonight. The first point is about grief, about tears. There's some concerns that I have, trends that I see growing every year when Muharram arrives, that I think it's about time that it should be addressed. And when it comes to actually shedding tears, there are two extreme groups, in my opinion, that are being formed, and they're gaining momentum. One group is that group that believes that this emotional aspect of the azadari is going a little bit too far. Maybe we need to make Imam Hussein's mission more academic. Maybe debates, maybe discussions, maybe sessions about understanding. Maybe we don't need to turn down the lights and retell these details about an 18-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 6-month-year-old or a 33-year-old. Maybe that's not needed. And they'll come in and they'll tell me, and they have told me, that on Shab-e Ashur, when we are busy going from this idara to that idara to this center to that masjid, this noha and that matam and that sina zani, etc., Imam Hussein was busy doing ibadat on the night of Ashura. To the point where Hadith says what? It was the buzzing of bees that was heard. That's how much in sync they were with their worship on Shab-e Ashur. And yet we go out and we cry and we lament and we beat our chest on the night of Ashura, when maybe we should be discussing the philosophy of Hussein. I have no problem with discussing the philosophy of Hussein. That's why you have a 45 to 50 minute lecture before the musibah. But don't underestimate the power of the tears, specifically of Imam Hussein. Traditions you've heard since you were a child, reminders for all of you, but it's important that we don't take it to the extreme where we believe, and nobody in here does, that you come and you shed a few tears, and for the rest of the year you live as you wish, and you have your boarding pass to Jannah already printed. It doesn't work like that. But let's not underestimate when we have, you know, Shaykh Abbas Qumi in Nafas al-Mahmum, his first chapter in that beautiful book on the Adha and the tragedy of Imam Hussein, he has 40 traditions on the tears of Imam Hussein alone. Everything from the size of a wing of a mosquito to all your sins being forgiven to everything, all these things are there. The angels collect the tears, take them back to heaven. All of them are sahih mu'tabar riwayat. On the other side, the other group, of course, is the one who removes the idea of any sort of fada'il and discussions on the minbar about those things that are currently going on in the Muslim Ummah, and just talk about the grief of Imam Hussein. So they'll wait in the car, they'll wait outside when the masayib is start, they'll wait for that text. Masayib has started, and they'll come in busloads. And they'll cry, and they'll beat their chest, and then they'll leave. And trying to understand Imam Hussein's mission at the aql level is nowhere on their roadmap. That's too extreme, if you ask me. We gotta be careful here. These are trends that are beginning. There has to be a middle ground. There has to be an understanding of why Imam Hussein did what he did. There has to be an application of that Hussein to this Hussein. There has to be an understanding of what to do in front of today's Yazid by looking at what happened in yesterday's Yazid. There has to be that. Otherwise, if we place and we leave Imam Hussein in the history books for someone to simply be remembered, we've done him a huge disservice. And all of you know this. I'm talking to a very intelligent crowd who's had many great ulama and scholars on this very member preach to you. Usually, you know, the Jamaat is very good at choosing speakers for Muharram. This year, I don't know what happened. I think Akil Bhai asked 3 or 4 people. They said no. So he said, look, if you have time, would you mind coming down? I said, okay, sure, I'll come down. But this is, you've been, alhamdulillah, you know, you've been spoken to by great ulama. Your resident alim alone is a great scholar. I don't need to explain to you the nitty-gritty details of things that are very obvious to you. But understand one thing, that even if for some reason you can't shed a tear, and some of us can't, we don't have the emotional capacity, that's fine. Hadith says what? To have the etiquette and the adab of one who is crying. Such that if somebody was to walk in, they would say the entire crowd right now is in a state of grief. If that means you, you know, you bend your head, you cover your face, whatever the case may be. When you look at some traditions by Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, Allahumma salli ala. When he talks about the cultivation of land inside the heart of the youth, a very famous tradition, that cultivation of the land, if I can take the example a little bit further, land sometimes that's not cultivated can harden sometimes, can it not? Yes, it can. If it's left alone for many, many months, it can harden. Trying to cultivate or dig up that land becomes difficult. What do you do to make that land a little bit soft is you add some water. Once that water is added to the land, then you can cultivate it, you can bend it, now you can plant whatever you want to plant inside that heart, but not before the water. He says to his son, Imam Mustafa, that look, the heart of our youth today is like uncultivated land. But if that heart is left alone, meaning there's no sort of inclination of God inside of it, it's going to harden. Sin after sin, ignorance after ignorance, ego upon ego, it's going to harden. And the one area that tells us that our heart is not completely hardened yet are the tears of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. Those tears tell us what? That there's still a reformable, revolutionary heart inside of us. Because the hadith says that one who cannot shed a tear sometimes due to the hardening of the heart, which has been caused by the excessive amount of sin. So now imagine you enter this room as a 16, 17, 18 year old, fighting shaitan day after day, not knowing what state you are in terms of your heart, and you listen to one musibah of Ali Asghar. One musibah of Al-Fazl al-Abbas. Bibi Zainab now accepting the bodies of her own Muhammad, and you begin to have this tear go down your face. Instantly you should know that there is still room for a revolution inside of me. You take those tears out, all those signs are gone. It's important that we understand that. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The last point I want to make to all of you in the masaib is a piece of advice, if you don't mind. I'm in no position to advise all of you. It's just advice for all of us. The reality is that in the next 10 nights, you will meet people and see people that you haven't seen all year long. Sometimes communities get a good read on how big their community is by the first 10 nights of Muharram. They don't realize how many numbers there are until the 7th, 8th, 9th of Muharram, until the day of Ashura, when, my goodness, there are this many people inside of our Jamaat. And that's a reality everywhere. I'm not here talking about why that happens, why it shouldn't happen, why it should happen. That's not my point. My point is that I want us to kind of avoid the idea of placing labels on individuals. And please hear me out. Sometimes, you know, we have these labels, don't we? 10-day Shias, 3-day Shias, Ashura Day Shia, for example. Those of us who frequent the center all year round, for some reason, we sometimes believe that we have the right to judge the spirituality of others and the closeness to Allah of others. Because we don't see them in the physical building, we might feel that they don't have the connection at all to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And so sometimes, you know, in our attempt to be humorous or our passive aggressive nature, we make comments to people that we haven't seen all year round. And those comments can cause a lot of damage. And to bring my point across, I just want to share with you one story. It's a story that I shared in last Sunday's majlis at Al-Mahdi for Tiflan Muslim. And those of you who were there, I apologize for the repeat, but this is a story for the first night of Muharram. And then Masaib, inshallah. A student of the Hawza, a young student of the Hawza studying in Qum. All of you with me, inshallah? Yes? Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. A young student of the Hawza studying in Qom, he approaches his teacher and says to his teacher that, Ustad, I want to go to Najaf to study. This was, of course, true story, back in the day when Najaf was the central hub of the Hawza studies in the Shia world. Anybody went through Najaf. He says, sure, no problem. So he packed up his books, very excited. And student life in the Hawza, of course, isn't very luxurious. So he attaches himself to a qafila, a caravan, that's going to Najaf from Qum for ziyarat. Now what was common back then was that there used to be thieves and robbers on the path from Qum to Najaf, waiting for caravans to loot them, to rob them. This young man with his books now attaches himself to the qafila. They make their way towards Najaf. In the middle of the night, they decide to what? Pitch up their tents, of course, and rest for the night. And lo and behold, there are a set of robbers that have come and began, of course, looting this caravan. And they announced that, I want all of your belongings, whatever you have in your bags, empty them in the middle right in front of me, the robbers say. The young man comes and all he has, of course, are these books. Puts the books inside the pile. When everything is done, the young man with a lot of himmat, a lot of strength, approaches the robber, says, look, Mr. Robber, inside of your pile of things are my books. They're torn, they're ripped, I've written in them, my notes are in them, they're no value to you at all, but they're everything to me. Just give my books back. That's all I ask. The robber says that in the distance, you see that hill, there's a light on top of that hill, there's a man standing on that hill. He's my boss. Go and ask him for permission to get your books back. If he says yes, no problem, they're yours. Young man now, again, with himmat, goes to that hill, that light, and sees a man there who's on top of the hill, and he's praying namaz-e-shab, salatul layl. And he waits until he's finished. And he's very confused, and he says that, I've been told that you are the chief and the boss of this circle of robbers, where you have a business where you rob people going towards Najaf. He says, yes, that's me. How can I help you? He says, well, one of your employees took my books, and I want my books back. They are of no value. Believe me, you'll get nothing for them. He summons his robber, he says, give him his books back. He takes his books, he goes on his way, he stops for a moment, turns back around, goes back to the chief, a lot of himmat, a lot of courage, and says, if you don't mind me asking, on one side you are the chief of this whole circle of robbers, you loot and you rob people, innocent zawar who are going to Najaf to say the salam to their mullah, But on the other side, in the middle of the night, you're praying namaz ishab. Can you explain this to me? The man's perplexed. He looks at the young man and says to him that no one has ever asked me that question before. He says that, you're right. I do all of this. I loot people. I rob them. I take whatever belongings they have. The one act that I do for God is this namaz ishab. I don't sleep at night. It's the one thing I do to somehow justify everything else I do. We do that a lot. He says, okay. And the young man moved on his way. Ends up in Najaf. Decides to go for ziyarat one day. In front of the dhari of Amir al-Mu'mineen, he sends his salams. He can hear the sound of a man crying, wailing. He goes around the corner, he sees the same boss, chief, in front of the dhari of Amir al-Mu'mineen on his hands and knees, begging and crying for forgiveness. This young man approaches him, picks him up. He says, do you recognize me? He says, no, I don't. I was that young man with the books. He goes, yes, now I remember you. He goes, you're here in front of the dhari. What's going on? He says, your one question sparked everything inside of me. And I decided to change my life completely. And now I'm begging my Mawla for his forgiveness to get me Allah's forgiveness. My brothers and my sisters, there are people who enter this masjid and this hall after not spending the entire year in this building. And they muster up the courage to put on their clothes and get on the car and drive to the masjid. They haven't been here in months, and park their car and make that walk from their car to door number, whatever, enter there and sit inside the majlis, knowing full well, maybe feeling this weight of stress or weight of anxiety, knowing full well the last time I was in this building might have been last Ashura. And he recognizes, he may feel like all eyes are already on me. People are talking about me, whispering, paranoid perhaps. And someone like you and I come up to him and say, oh, ho, ho, look who's here. Wow, I can't believe you're here. Wrong turn, buddy. Is there food today? Are you sure you're in the right place today? Eid ka chand, all these things that we say. And we say it maybe as humorous, maybe as a joke. But we don't know for a moment with what umid and what hope and what stress and what anxiety that man has entered the majlis of Imam Hussein. You have no idea. Maybe he does everything else. The one thing that he does, he sits on this farshe azza every single year. And you don't know, the past 6 months, maybe he's gone through extreme difficulty. High level of stress, high level of anxiety, high level of depression, suicidal thoughts, has tried every door there is, knocked on every door from some sort of help, every door has closed on his face, and then he's heard about a door from when he was this big, the door of Hussein. And I heard that tonight is the first of Muharram. Let me go and let me see if there's any sort of salvation or hope in this door. And bring my weights and my skeletons and my closet and my sins and my mistakes and my anxiety. Come and sit in a mahfil. Maybe I might feel lighter. Maybe I might feel like I belong to something. Maybe Imam Hussein might have some karam and generosity on me. Maybe I might feel like I'm not a complete failure. And with that hope, with that umid, they enter that masjid. They enter this door, and the first person they see is, oh, ho, ho, they cook on I, why, mashallah. Look who's here. Where have you been? And that's it. And every single fear he had is all true. I knew I shouldn't have come. And he may never come back again. Instead, maybe we can bring him in and say, you know how much I've missed you? You know how it is, it's nice to see you, embrace him. Ask him about his family, about his friends, about his job, about his wife, about his marriage. Come and bring him a cup of tea and break bread with him. Give him a piece of your mandazi, it's okay. Give it to him. Sit there and talk to him. Maybe that cup of tea might be the salvation he needs. Maybe now all those fears he had in that one brief moment, because wallahi, I tell you, it takes a spark and that's it. That took that one question of that one kid to that one man, that why namaz isha on one hand and why robbing people on the other was enough for him to do what? Be on his hands and knees in front of Amirul Mu'mineen. Welcome those people. Welcome that young kid who walks in 17 years old. He might have a funky hairdo, some piercing, some tight clothing, whatever. Don't stare at him. Don't gawk at him. Welcome him. Sit him beside you. Ask him his name. Welcome him to the community. Sit there and offer a piece, some tea. And make sure that you let him know that, look, this is not my Farshi Aza. It belongs to Imam Hussein. You have seen, I have seen, hearts change in an instant. I've seen individuals come in with a hard shell, but that hard shell is a cover-up for what's truly inside of them. A fragile individual who's on the verge of breaking down completely, and the one glue could be the Farshi Aza of Imam Hussein. And God forbid, because of our passive-aggressive comment or our attempt to be funny, we all, of course, wash that aside. We have to take everybody with us on this journey towards salvation. Imam Hussein, until his dying breath, did his best to do what? To save the nation around him. Can you imagine now, on the night of Ashura, the night before Ashura, he's summoning Umar ibn Sa'd to come and sit in the tent with me. You don't bring Hurmala and Shimr, I won't bring Ali Akbar and Abul Fadl. Me and you, man on man, we know each other from childhood. Let's talk about what's gonna happen tomorrow. And not Na'udha to save Imam Hussein's life, but to save Umar ibn Sa'd's akhirat. And to tell him, that look, if you plan to do what you plan to do tomorrow and shed my blood, there are heavy consequences. Asr Ashur, Imam Hussein is completely exhausted. Shimon is on his chest. In the faintest of voices, he says to Shimon, did I do dhulm on you? Was I a bad mullah to you? Did I do injustice to you? Bibi Zainab, 70 feet away on Tilla Zainabiyah, is screaming at Umar ibn Sa'd, this is the son of Fatima. Are you sure you want to do what you're about to do? Meaning until the very last breath, the Ahlul Bayt Sunnah is what? To save as many lives as possible. Adopt that Sunnah these next 10 nights. Take people with you. If Allah gives you that tawfiq, then spread that tawfiq across those people around you. But tonight is the night of the first night of the month of Muharram. And we send our condolences to Imam Zamana. Imam Zamana now is making his way towards Karbala. We know that Imam Zamana on the day of Ashura sits at the head of Imam Hussein, and he says in Zat al-Nahiyah that I cry tears of blood, tears of blood. That same Zat al-Nahiyah where Imam Zamana says that if I was present on the day of Ashura, I would throw my body in front of those arrows that would come one by one towards you. I'd sacrifice my blood for your blood, O Mawla. My children for your children, O Mawla. My spirit, my soul, my breath for your breath, O Mawla. The same Zat al-Nahiyah where Imam Zamana states that if anybody is closer to the Ashab of Imam Hussein, it's the ashab that will stand beside me on this night of the first of Muharram, possibly the first of Muharram. Let's make a pledge to Imam Zamana that we will attempt to become your Ansar. We will attempt that through these tears to stand beside you in your mission. If that was their Hussein, you, Imam Mahdi, are our Hussein. If there's an Ali Akbar back then, there's Ali Akbar today as well. If there's a Bibi Zainab back then, there's a Bibi Zainab today as well. One riwayat we have from Alama Tabarisi, Sahib Tafsir Majmul Bayan. He says that I read about the greatness of the Ashab of Imam Hussein, and I went to sleep with a little bit of doubt in my mind that how could it be that they claim that the Prophet didn't have Ashab, Imam Ali didn't have Ashab, Imam Mustafa didn't have Ashab, the way that Abu Abdullah al-Hussein had Ashab. How is it possible? And with that doubt, with that shuck, I went to sleep, he says. And I woke up and I found myself in the Maidan of Karbala, facing in front of Imam Hussein. And my Mola Hussein says, Tabarisi, I have a job and a role for you. He says, Salat al-Zuhr is about to begin. And these enemies wait for me to begin my salat to, of course, attack me. I want you to stand in front of my jama'ah and block the arrows so nobody gets hit while they pray behind me. Tabarisi says, I was very happy. Mawla had a job for me, had a mission for me. I was worthy to be part of Imam Hussein's mission. Salat al-Zuhr begins. Tabarisi says, I stand there in front of jama'ah, Allahu Akbar, and a rain of arrows comes towards me. I see one arrow coming towards me right in front of my nose. And I duck to the point where that arrow hit the chest of my Mawla Hussein. And I woke up that morning in tears, angry, upset, depressed. How could it be that Imam Hussein asked me for a mission and I never fulfilled it? For the next two nights, the exact same dream happened. The arrow came, Tabarisi ducked. It hit Imam Hussein. On the third night, Imam Hussein is standing in front of Tabarisi, two arrows in his chest. He says, Tabarisi, you have the gall, you have the audacity, you have the himmat to question my ashab. My ashab are those companions that when I began Salat al-Zuhr, Zuhair ibn Qayn, 22 different arrows he would block one by one to the point when Imam Hussein says, As-salamu alayka wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Zuhair ibn Qayn falls to the ground. Imam Hussein goes rushing. Zuhair says, Mawla, accept my apology. If I had an ounce of breath, I would take more arrows for you. We pledge to Imam Zamana tonight, accept our condolences, and we will do everything we can to work towards being your ashab. So ya'lamu alladhina zalamu ayyamun qalibin yanqalibun inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Ma'tamir Hussain.